Given that we have a progressive tax system, your income tax payments drop more than in proportion. And two, there are special benefits that are there for senior citizens. And so this is going to be a situation where, as you can see here, drops of 30% in income going from age 64 to age 65 turn out to produce much larger drops in revenue from an individual household. Finally, the slide that you're all waiting for, kind of the three most popular words in any speech, and that is, and in conclusion. Let's review what we've told you. What we've told you is that Minnesota has been very successful, but we are in a period of rapid and critical change, and demographic forces are going to shape our future for the next quarter century. How we respond to those demographic forces is going to be the key. One of the demographic forces is going to be the retirement of the baby boom. But another one that doesn't get as much attention is going to be the slow labor force growth that we'll see as the 18 to 24-year-olds don't grow as fast. Demand for public services will reflect the trends in age structure, and these economic and demographic shifts will shift budget priorities. The real question, coming back to something we talked about earlier, we look back on the decisions that people made 50-plus years ago. We say thanks, that you did a really good job. And the real question is, how will Minnesotans 50-plus years from now view our generation's stewardship? Thank you.
We will take some questions for Tom and Tom being collected right now. All right, the first one to make it to the podium here. Boy, this is a smart group. Will the increase in competition for workers create inflationary pressures and therefore higher interest rates and lower economic growth?
The answer is no, because it's back to one of those economic facts of life that we put on the board, which is that you can't pay workers more than the value of their marginal product. And so as long as you're paying workers the value of their marginal product, it's not going to create inflationary pressures in there at all. I mean, that's why you take beyond the first week of class so that Tom was...
There's one.
Should we have more vacations and flex time?
Yes.
I'm all in favor of that. I'm all in favor of that for me, but I'm also all in favor of that because of this. The challenge that we're going to have is how do we increase the number of workers that we have in the economy? And as as we're looking to keep people in the workforce, we're going to have to end up coming up with innovative solutions. And those innovative solutions, the firms that are able to come up with the innovative solutions to maintain the human capital that they have in their workforce, those are the firms that are going to be successful. So the answer to that is yes, that's something that we're going to have to be thinking about. That's something that we should be thinking about, not just for business firms, but it's also going to be a problem for state government. Tom, I think you have something to say about the retirement of the workforce in state government?
Yeah, and I'll give you this. I'll give you that question to answer, and I'll talk about retirement. Will people need to retire later? Will older people need to pay for their own health care soon? Government can't afford it. Oh, that's a small question. There is a group called the Employment Benefit Research Institute, EBRI, which you can get on online, Google it, that does an annual survey of people's retirement intentions. And one of the questions that they, you know, they ask about, well, how well have you financially prepared and things like that. And one of the questions they asked was people preparing to retire, when do you expect to retire? And most American workers expect to retire at age 65 or later. And then they asked people who actually did retire just recently. And most of them retired around 62 to 63. Why do we have this disconnect? Well, they ask them, well, why did you retire earlier than you intended to? And the biggest reasons were health, disability, lost a job, things that were outside, or at least the people believed were outside of their control. So it may be possible to increase the retirement age, and even the question of what do we mean by retirement, because, you know, people retire, collect a pension from one place, go to work someplace else. It's all an extremely complex subject, but there's many definitions that I can show you, but they all tend to come together around age 62 to age 63. The other question has to do with the distribution of income and wealth, and the General Accounting Office, GAO, the federal government released a study this last summer, and based upon 2004 data, and as a result of that survey, this is for people workers who are age 55 and older, basically people approaching retirement. They looked at the total wealth accumulation. 50%, half of the people controlled less than 3% of the wealth in that group. And it wasn't totally related to income. It has to do with a number of factors that people can't always control, things like, does your employer have a defined benefit plan or something like that? And it also has to do with how much you've been saving over a long period of time. It's really hard to start that 2 or 3 years before your retirement and try to save enough to be able to retire on. So there are very serious concerns about how this is going to go forward in the future, and healthcare costs are rising, and there are grave concerns over people's access to healthcare. Again, Minnesota has the highest level of health insurance coverage, the highest level of health access and outcome of any state in the nation. Primarily that is due to the fact that our employers are, primarily it is an employment-based insurance function. Minnesota ranks, I believe it's number 2 in the nation in the proportion of people with employment-based health insurance. That's where Minnesota is rather exceptional.
One of the questions that came up says, does your presentation tell us we need to attract more immigrants? And the answer is pretty clear. If you remember that graph that we had up there, if we don't get more immigrants, and here when we're talking about immigrants, we're talking about people from other states as well as other countries. If we don't get more immigrants, we're not going to have any increase in the labor force in 2020. We're going to be stagnant, and that's going to create problems. Firms are going to leave Minnesota because they can't find the workers. And that's going to be a problem for us. So the answer is, yes, we need to attract more immigrants. Now, should they come from foreign countries? Should they come from other states? They're going to come. Now, Mr. Sinclair, in the first section, answered the question. He said he was a realist, and I found his answer really refreshing. He said two things. One is immigrants are going to come. And two, the important thing that we're going to have to be able to do is make sure that they are able to compete at a high level in the workforce. I mean, most of you know this, but Minnesota's workforce has a national reputation as being a productive, well-educated, good, strong workforce. There's a reason why manufacturing employment in Minnesota has grown over the last few decades and it's shrunk nationally. And that is because the Minnesota worker has a strong brand identification. The Minnesota worker is well known for his productivity. What we have to be concerned about is if we have a large number of immigrants coming to the state, people coming not from Iowa and North Dakota and South Dakota and Wisconsin, but from Alabama and Illinois and California and from foreign countries, whether we will be able to maintain that same brand identification for the Minnesota worker. Because if we don't maintain that brand identification, we are at the end of the road in terms of the transportation network. And it's going to be increasingly difficult for us to attract new jobs to the state. So that's an important thing.
And just on that last point, it does appear that we are beginning to show signs of slipping in that preparation. And that brand identification, you know, which is wonderful. I mean, I remember when I first came to Minnesota, you know, people, when everybody else in the United States was lusting after the German example, I remember people coming from Germany wondering how we did it so well. You know, and so that's something that we need to be aware of. We can't let these things slip through our fingers.
Well, let's thank Tom and Tom. Okay, a couple quick announcements here before we break. In your packet is the halftime highlights, and this was just updated within the last few weeks, so each of your names are in there with your legislative district and the population changes over the last 5 years, so you want to make note of that. Also, Senator Michelle had mentioned the 2020 conference. That group, as well as seven other legislative interest groups, will have tabletop displays starting at 3:30 today, so you'll want to stop by and talk to your fellow legislators about any of those groups that you might be interested in for this legislative session. The technology displays that you've been enjoying this morning will end at 2:15, so there's just a few minutes now on the way to lunch to see them again, and then a few minutes after lunch to see them, and then they'll be leaving starting at 2:15, and we'll be doing the drawing later in the afternoon, so it'll be kind of your last chance to get that punch card completed. And on your folder is mark the lunch table that we've put you at. We tried to mix people up so that people from various parts of the state are together. We do have a few extra lunches today, so I know there'll be some extra room up front, so you might want to move a little closer if your table seems too full. Okay, and just a couple other things. Our luncheon speakers, as you know, will be three former governors and a former congressman to give their perspectives, and I think this will be a really interesting lunch, so I look forward to that. And we're going to be going to a different building for lunch. Okay. And how you get there is we're going to go down one floor. There's either steps or an elevator. Follow the signs. And then when you get to the Carlson building, which is right next door, you're going to go up one floor. So basically you can get there without going outside if that's what you choose to do. And so we'll get started over there at 12:30. We'll have lunch, and then we'll come back here at 2:15. So I think Sheila Kiskaden here has a quick message.
I just wanted to let you know two things about the presentation that you just heard. One is that a lot of what they discussed was written up in the Rural Journal by the Center for Rural Policy Development. Is that the right title?
Rural Minnesota
Journal. Some of you got copies of that last year, but that is available, and it's very useful, and it gets into much more detail about the economic differences of economic regions, and I found it very interesting last year. Secondly is that one time last year, on a very, very cold, cold night, it was like 20 below, Mr. Stinson and Mr. Gillespie came to Rochester and did a very similar presentation in our community. And believe it or not, it was like 20 below and the room was 30 degrees. And we had about 100 people in our community show up to listen to them. So just know that they are a resource that's available to you beyond today. Thank you. See you after lunch.
Lunch at 12:30, back here 2:15. Thank you.